by John for Jack Elka.
Oh, what a goal! What a goal!
Welcome to the Toffee Blues, your source for all things Everton, and welcome to another podcast where we'll be starting off, as usual, with the extra time segment, where Teddy, Owen and I will be here to look back on another hard slog of a watch as Everton labour to a 1-1 draw with Aston Villa. And then Teddy and I will be joined by Thomas to look ahead to our upcoming away game at Bramall Lane, our final away game of the season against Sheffield United, in another match preview segment. Thomas will also be joining us for the middle bit in between, and he and Teddy will be slugging it out at the end as well in our quiz. So there's loads to get through. As you know, the segments are separate videos on YouTube as always, so I'll introduce them and whatnot. So let's get to it and look back on the draw against Villa.
To the extra time segment for Everton 1, Aston Villa 1. I'm joined by Teddy McAllister and Owen Parks for this one, and we're going to be looking back on yet another subpar Everton performance. Only this time we somehow got a point. Teddy, I'll start with you. Did you enjoy that yesterday?
One thing I enjoying it is the words I'd use. It was the manager said that we were going to get a response, didn't he? And we, you know, we certainly did for
20 minutes.
Yeah, that first drinks break killed us right off. We, you know, the effort. It's got to be said, the effort was an improvement from Wolves, but I don't think it could have been any worse. You know, the players seemed like they were. You know, they were bang up for the game and they wanted to prove a point, but then once the drink break it and Villa got to grips with us, it came down to quality. And, you know, like I said in the preview, Villa have got a much better midfield than us, and it showed. They just haven't got a striker who can score goals. If they had an half decent striker, we'd have lost that game comfortably, because they would run in the midfield. And I feel like we talk about it every segment, every show. The midfield just isn't up to scratch, because even players who, like, it's weird. Like, okay, you know, Andre Gomes and Bernard, for example. Like, even no one would say they were very impactful players, even when they were playing, like, you know, what a lot of people consider to be their best football. They never really got involved in the goals or the assists or even the chances created. But they were tardy footballers. Like, Andre Gomes could keep the ball, shield the ball, recycle it. Bernard, you know, had a good, you know, good touch, and he was, you know, he linked up well with Luka Dean. The two of them at the minute, they don't seem like they've played before. Like, every time they get it, they're losing possession and getting dispossessed. And it's just compounded a lot of other issues. Like, obviously, we've got the injuries to the defensive midfielders in Delph and Gabamon, which, you know, been the case all along, but we could have really done without, like, players who you can usually rely on to at least, you know, keep the ball and, you know, move it on. And, you know, you don't want to rave about Bernard and Gomes, but usually you'd expect them to be better footballers than they have been.
Usually one of the better ones, yeah. But
yeah, I mean, I think now, you know, Owen was a bit of a pariah before the lockdown for calling out Gomes on his.
I'll tell you what.
I was just about to say, we've got Owen on the show, so I think if anyone's going to be a Gomes detractor, I think we'll let him say his piece.
Well, everyone, myself included, when they saw Owen, like, talking down about our Andre at first, we're like, what's this lad on? And now it seems like he was ahead of the curve, doesn't it? Like, he saw it before anyone else. But even before, like, these games, like, all right, Gomes didn't move the needle on the Al stat, you know, he didn't contribute as much as many people thought he did. But even Owen, I'm sure, would say, like, he was a tardy footballer, he could keep the ball, he could pass, and it's totally deserted him. So I've gone off on a tangent on Gomes and Bernard, but basically the midfield got battered again, and we were lucky to get everything from the game, top and bottom of it.
I saw a horrible statistic actually on Twitter last night, and it was Watford, of course, 17th in the league at the moment, barely stayed up by the looks of it. And Andre Gomes has been dribbled past 159 times this season, which is more than Kapuwe, Decore and Will Hughes combined.
That's that reprobate with Luke McKenzie, isn't it? He's up to his old tricks, I see.
It's just, I think, were these the kind of things that you were sceptical of in the first place, Owen, when it comes to Gomes?
Well, before we bought him, or before lockdown?
Yeah, I mean, before lockdown, when you first started calling him out.
it weren't much calling them out. It was this thing that we only needed one midfielder, and I put that issue to people, and they said, no, we definitely only need one because Gomez is in Iniesta mark too. And I've said, no one's ever seen any evidence of this. He's all right on the ball. He can recycle it a bit, but put him up in a proper battle, and he just goes high from like the rest of them. And he had done for the previous 18 months. He created one big chance in 18 months before yesterday, where he created a couple. I don't know why he doesn't do that more often, because he's pretty good at finding a decent pass. He just never seems to get into the positions. But that's Gomez. Bernard, on the other hand, he's regressing massively. When he first came to the club, I was a bit of a fan of him, because when he came in, he looked like he could create and he could score. He went scoring, but he looked like he was getting in the positions too. The last couple of weeks, he's up there with Bolasie, to be honest, and like 17, 18 version of Bolasie, where he just couldn't kick a ball straight.
But to be honest, I think it's worse than Bolasie, because at least Bolasie could hold himself up and not get knocked over constantly.
No.
I've never seen a player get knocked off the ball as easily as Bernard. And I know he's not pretty diminutive, but
no,
it's still embarrassing how easy he gets knocked off it.
No, I wasn't a huge fan of Bernard before the lockdown even. I didn't think he'd done anything since about October either, but at least with Bernard, I always thought he could get into good positions, pick a pass, and even if he weren't directly contributing, he'd force a man to take him, and then that would free up space for someone else. But people just look at him and think, don't need to go near him. I listen to fans of other clubs, non-Everton fans, speak about Andre Gomez and Bernard, and they genuinely think they're woeful. They watch them and think, we've got players who we feel who cost, well, Bernard didn't cost anything, but have lesser reputations than these two, and they offered so much more. And I agree with them, because I just don't get anything from them. I don't think they add to the game. And I want a team of Everton players who add to what we're doing, rather than just become bit part players. And I think this has come from, I'm not going to criticise Man City, but they, or teams like that, who have like a whole midfielder who doesn't necessarily do much in the game in terms of goals and that, but he recycles the ball well. And that would have been fine if that's what Gomez is, but he's not even doing that at the moment. That being said, Gylfi Sigurdsson and Tom Davis give him a real run for his money, and I think Sigurdsson probably eclipses him at the moment.
Yeah, I think it's... I mean, to be fair, Sigurdsson didn't really get on the pitch for long yesterday and didn't have time to embarrass himself as much as he did against Wolves, but, you know, he still didn't do a lot, did he?
He had that one shot at the end, didn't he, where he sort of got deflected wide. But again, he's even worse, because he can't even pass a ball.
I mean, what about Tom
Davis? I was going to say.
Yeah, he can't pass a ball either.
The midfield options, like, you know, Gomez is, you know, badly out of form, Bernard's badly out of form, but it's like, just for Gomez, like, what can he do? Like, he's the other two are even worse. Like, I'd still start Gomez next game, like, because I'd rather have him on the pitch than Sigurdsson, and I don't think Gomez and Sigurdsson together works either. So it's like, and there's someone watching this now going, Benny Beningame, I think it's time we give up on that. He wasn't even on the bench. It's not going to happen. So I think just a case of your dad said, was he?
Adam.
No, he wasn't on the bench.
I don't think he was. There we go then.
Well, rightly or wrongly, you've got to at least, you know, acknowledge that Carlo Ancelotti knows more about football than any Everton fan. So
you can say that. You can say that, but why isn't he blooding some kids at this stage? Because, you know, there's nothing to play for.
Well, it depends how you look at it. You know, league position is a thing. You know, like, setting standards is a thing. He wants to win these games. I don't think he's clearly not the type of manager we've sat now seeing who writes off dead rubbers. He wants to win the matches. The players aren't obviously getting the message.
The players he's picking aren't delivering, so he might as well try something different.
Yeah, but you've got to look at it in the sense that it's the integrity of the league. If we throw 11 kids from the under-23s in, Watford and West Ham are going to be like, what's going on here? We've got teams against Villa, where we play Villa and Bournemouth, both who are in the fight of their lives. If we start playing me and Terry in midfield, as much as that probably wouldn't be any worse than what we've got, it's still to do with the whole way the league is shaped, and there's points to be aimed. If we get whacked the last 2-3-0 and we have 11 kids in, but people aren't going to look at that any more positively. We draw them 1-1 and Tom Davis plays.
But it's again, it's one of those. I think there does need to be, you know, we don't really blood enough kids at the moment, I don't think. I think some of the under-23s could maybe, you know, just see what they can do. And if they don't do well, then, okay, but we've been embarrassed in three of our last four games, so...
Yeah, I know.
So why not try something a little bit different?
I get what you're saying, yeah, but it's just, he has done it, though. Like, Gordon was not a player before the lockdown. Like, Branthwaite was not a player before the lockdown, and now you'd look and go, well, what did you get out of the... that little mini tournament of Premier League games. Well, we got two more players there and we didn't think we had. He sort of has, but I know what you're saying. I would like him to play, you know, well, at least Moyes Keane. I'm not saying he's looked good when he's come on, but, you know, I'd like to see him get an actual full game. And I'm not saying, you know, we'll when we play him in a full game and he'd be class, but, you know, what? Why not? Like, just play him. But I think Owen's right. Like, you can't just, with a relegation battle, you can't just go, right then, there's Markelo and there's Adeniran and Benignami playing. And because, you know, West Ham and Watford, especially West Ham, are already a little bit pissed off that they're playing these games and might go down. So you don't want to be getting yourself in any trouble by not playing a proper team, because it has happened before where teams have gone to the Premier League when other teams have not played proper teams.
That's their problem, though, isn't it? At the end of the day.
That whole thing years ago when Liverpool were playing Fulham, and they were in a battle with Sheffield United, and Benitez played Stephen Darby. Got beat one.
Owen Warnock lost the plot, didn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, you say it's their problem. It becomes our problem if we do that. I know what you're saying. Like, you know, this team's not playing well, so why are we holding them up as these can win the game? But this is a manager who's been everywhere, seen it and done it all. Like, I understand that. Questioning the manager when you've got a joker like Silva or Martinez or even Koeman at one point, but when you've got a manager like Ancelotti, I think you know no manager's ever beyond question. But I think for things like this, you've got to just go, you know, it's a few dead rubbers at the end. He must know he sees them all in training. He must not rate Benignami. He must not rate, you know, a few other players in centre midfield, because he can't be looking at Sigurdsson doing nothing and pointing, and Davies and Gomez getting dispossessed every 2 minutes, and think, well, I've got a better midfielder there, but I'm not going to bother with him. Like, he mustn't be very good.
Is that where do you think the issue lies, that these under-23 players aren't good enough? I mean, Bellingham, I know he's getting towards 23 anyway, I think, so maybe his ship sailed, but what about the even younger lads? Are they just not ready, maybe, or...?
Yeah, probably. I mean, he's played Gordon. He must have looked and went, well, he's ready. The rest aren't. Like, he's shown with Gordon that if he thinks he's good enough, he'll play him. I didn't think we'd see Gordon. I thought Gordon would be getting the Moyes Keane minutes. Like, he'd be coming on for 20 minutes or, like, you know, 5 minutes at the end. You know, but when the lockdown finished, I thought that's what Gordon's role would be. But he's, like, our most crucial midfielder at the minute. Like, so he's clearly not against playing a kid if he thinks he's good enough. But if he thinks he's good enough is the key.
I think that is it. And I mean, to be fair, Moyes Keane, what we have seen, hasn't really been good enough, has he?
No. The issue with Moyes Keane is for he will do one good thing where he will turn someone and go on, and then he'll just kick his eyes or go into the stands or just...
Yeah, he did exactly that yesterday, didn't he?
Yeah, that's the example I'm using. But he does a good thing and then a bad thing. And as much as I do agree, I do think he needs to start. I think possibly Bournemouth for that before the end of the season. I do worry and think, I do wonder if he'll be at Everton next season, to be honest. And that's not my opinion. I think that'll be their opinion.
Well, I mean, it's not like Everton fans to be needy. If we signed him last summer, he was meant to be the new Lukaku, and I saw comparisons to Nias yesterday.
It's Everton, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I'm at the point with Keane where I'm ambivalent to it. He, I think I've said this before, but he's not one I worry about because he's in a position of the team that's quite settled. Like, there's two players clearly ahead of him. Now, you know, last couple of games, they've not been playing well, but big picture-wise, those two, are you know, Calvert-Lewin and Richarlison are our two first-choice strikers. So Keane can afford to, you know, come on and, you know, here and there, play, you know, hopefully from the start and the odd dead rubber, you know, feel his way in. Because there's, you know, touch wood though, injuries, there's established players ahead of him, whereas the midfield is a crisis right now. You know, like, it's that's a totally different kettle of fish. Someone need, you know, like, the strikers are not a problem, at the minute, because if we had midfielders who were creating chances and the two of them couldn't score, then you could point the finger at them. But Calvert-Lewin's not been playing well the last few games at all, but I just can't blame him because he's got nothing, has he? He's getting like one chance a game, and if he's not scoring it, he's getting criticised.
And somebody pointed out actually during the game yesterday, like, we've noticed Calvert-Lewin and Richarlison about drifting really wide to try and involve themselves in the game, and that's to the detriment of the scoring chances as well, because they're trying to make the service themselves instead of actually getting adequate service.
Calvert-Lewin looks tired. Like, it's something that, you know, because we're very demanding of the team, no one's acknowledging that, like, you know, fatigue would be a thing. And, you know, because other teams, don't forget, like, Southampton started poorly and are now playing well. We've started well and are now playing poorly. It's, you know, Calvert-Lewin's one of probably the most, he covers probably the most grounds of any player on the pitch whenever Everton play, and he's playing a lot and he's not scoring, he's not getting much reward. You know, he's doing it all for nothing really. He's not getting any chances to try and score, apart from the odd one or two, which, you know, he is fluffing, he's out of form, but I think he looks tired. And this is why I think Moyes Keane could probably start, even if you don't see wholesale changes, because even though Keane's not been playing well either, he will be fresher than him. Calvert-Lewin.
You've got the thing now, you're looking at Gomez and there's every bad move.
Yeah. Well,
even when Calvert-Lewin's like skies it over a kick over the bar, it's like, that's Gomez's fault, that.
Yeah.
Well, it's James Dean as Paul Pogba.
Yeah. No, I'm still not ready to throw me badge in for Gomez. Like, I'm still part of the club. But I'm having to hold my hands up and go, he's not
been doing well.
Yeah, but it's one of them as well. It's I keep saying this, and people will be sick of me. This is nothing we don't already know. We knew going into these games, we're going to play 4-4-2 with Sigurdsson, Gomez and Davies as the three midfielders. That's going to be really rough. And I think that and the fatigue and everything else is bleeding onto the rest of the team. Now the strikers look knackered. The defenders, you know, it's
overworked.
The midfielders, the three midfielders themselves are starting to get worse. Like, Davies and Gomez didn't start as badly as they're playing now, but it's a cute, I think any of our players we made up to see the season finish now, just because I don't think they've got much in the tank now.
I think, is that testament to the poor fitness levels of this team as well? I mean, I know it's difficult to play this many games in the manner that we've been doing it since the restart, but it feels like we're the least well-equipped team to play week in, week out like this, because I don't know what it is. We always seem to look like one of the most unfit sides in the league.
Yeah, you say that, Terry, and I understand what you're saying about the players being on the last legs and that, but we do have options. If you have a look at some teams like Sheffield United and Burnley, they've got about five players to the name and they're giving a lot more than we are.
That's another good point.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. I mean, what you said then, James, like, I don't know whether it's they're not fit enough in general, or it's the injuries. Like, you know, we're asking, how do I say it? I think if either Delph or Gabamon are fit, I think we wouldn't see these performances. And I'm not a fan of Delph, but an extra midfield body to sort of, because I think at the minute, if Delph would come back fit, if Delph comes back fit, he won't. But if he does, he'll go straight in the team. And I think it's just by having someone else in there, a fresh pair of legs,
it stops you as tiring as much, maybe.
Yeah, it might just, you know, change the formula in there. But then again, Delph's legs are made of paper mache, aren't they? So I don't know how fresh they'd be. I don't know. It's one of them. At these last two games, it's like I'm just hoping we see more of Branthwaite, more of Gordon, and we see Moyes Keane from the start so people can stop asking for it, myself included.
There you go, yeah. But yeah, on the note of the midfield being bossed, one of those players was John McGinn. I'd have him at Everton, would you?
I get it's a similar one for Højbjerg. He wouldn't do any worse, but I'm not sure if it elevates us massively, and I think we need an opportunity now where we get midfielders in who are like really transformers. I think he would do better than what we've got, and I think if they're going down because they're rubbish, but if they go down, then there might be an option there. But I think I'd prefer someone else.
I'm just thinking if there's some sort of a Drisigana Gaius clause in there where we could get him for, like, you know, less than 10 million, I think that could be doable. If we paid it for Delph, I'd pay it for him again.
Mm, yeah, maybe, yeah.
I like what I agree with what you're saying. He's a good footballer, but I don't think he's what we need. He plays in a three-man midfield, so there's no guarantee he'd suit a 4-4-2. And we don't need little creative players in there. We need strong, powerful, put your foot on the ball type players. Like, we need Patrick Vieira. We don't need Paul Scholes. Like, you know what I mean? Like, little creative players are not going to fix our centre midfield issues. So, I mean, Højbjerg, I don't know whether we're going to do a different segment on him because it's, you know, it's pretty official now that we're in for him. But the only thing I know about him is he's got really good ball recovery stats, and I think that's.
Well, we need that. We desperately need that.
That's an important thing. Whether he moves the needle in the sense of he comes in and he's transformational in midfield, it depends on the context, because, you know, him by himself might not be enough, but him alongside another midfielder might
work. Yeah.
The difference, but we'll save the talk on that, I'm sure.
But let's just say I was right about Højbjerg's gonna sign, just because we wave a few bits of Hummel gear in his face and, like, being a day, and he'll just be like, yeah, definitely, I'm signing for them.
It's quality gear, that.
It is
a bit small fit, isn't it?
Has anyone's kits arrived? I know your shorts have arrived, haven't they, Terry?
Yeah, my training shorts have arrived, but don't usually bother with the tops, but it's a good job as well, because everyone's saying that they're a small fit, and I think most things are a small fit on me to begin with, so I don't need to be exacerbating it.
Fair play. But I think we're going off on a tangent again, but I think it's completely understandable when you consider we're looking for positives, and there's not many positives from the actual game itself that we're looking back on. One of them was the fact that we actually scored the goal. Theo Walker scored the header. And Andre Gomez got an assist, which is, again, a rare one, especially Owen will tell you.
Well, I think it's his second assist, isn't it? Well, I'll tell you one. What huge step for Andre Gomez, that.
He's played games.
He's doubled his assist output for the season.
Gomez has played games, usually against West Ham, where he's absolutely ran the game and he's not got an assist. How can he play as shit as he did yesterday and get an assist? It just makes no sense.
That's football for you, isn't it?
Are we looking at the goalie for their goal, by the way?
Pepe Reina?
No. Their goalie.
Jordan Pickford.
Yeah.
Well, he did dive the wrong way, so maybe.
Yeah, there we go.
I don't really want to blame Pickford, though. That's just, you haven't scored a goal yet? All right, we'll sort you right out. I think that was his first Villa goal, so charity case club, we love so. I thought we were going to give them their first away clean sheet, but...
That's what I was saying. That's why I'm astonished we got that goal at the end.
Tell you what, if they were a Premier League side, we'd have been beat soundly. Because shite, but they were shite and all. Like, there's a reason they're going down. Any other team in this division, probably Norwich included, would have beat us yesterday.
Yeah, probably about right there. And it's a tough one, isn't it? There was, like you say, one big positive, and that was Branthwaite, wasn't it?
Yeah, he played very well. The thing I like about him is he looks really comfortable on the ball. Normally, when you buy players from like League Two, the like fourth division football, sometimes the technical ability when they first come into the team, it needs time to get used to. But he looks a really good footballer as well as a defender who does know how to handle himself against. I know Samata's not great, like, but he's still a tough customer when he comes to, like, holding the ball up, and I thought he did really well.
Yeah, I mean, even Keenan Davis come on after that as well, and he's a very physical, pacey player, and he handled him okay as well, I thought.
Well, it is Keenan Davis, right, but it is still difficult when he comes into a team. I think he did reasonably well against Jimenez on Sunday, so I feel like it's all
positive. That's more of a benchmark to go by, I'd say, than Samatha or Keenan Davis, but...
Yeah.
I mean, they said it on commentary last night, but I agree with it. That's one thing. With all the bad recruitment that's gone on at Everton for the past 5 years plus, that's one thing that we've been really good at, is plucking, you know, young players out of the lower leagues and tearing them around. You know, like, obviously, some of them took longer than others, but now if you look at our team, some of our key starters are Calvert-Lewin, Holgate. You know, you'd go to John Stones. Hopefully, Branthwaite can be another one of them. I don't want to, like, get too excited for him, but it was a surprisingly good performance. Some kids come on and a disaster. He came on and he looked comfortable. You know, he got clattered early by Mings going up for an aim. Not clattered, like he landed on top of him, didn't he? And like,
I thought he angled it really well. I thought,
yeah, the physical aspect he did really well, didn't he? He's got a few bad habits. He's, you know, he's still he's got that lower league thing where he's trying to suplex the striker every time, so he needs to. He gets very tight to the man, and it's like better strikers are going to make you pay for that, mate. So you need to be careful. And he's trying to have the shirt off everyone, but he was good. He was a bright point in the game, and he you know, probably will go on loan next season, but he could be one to watch, you know, going forward.
Alternatively, we could just stick him in midfield for the next game, and at least we know he'll actually put a foot in.
Yeah,
or play him and Keane and throw Holgate in if he's back. Midfield.
Yeah, any of that, just someone who'll tackle in midfield, please. Just desperate to see someone put a tackle in the middle of the park.
What I don't get about that is when Tom Davis first came in the team, he looked really mobile and like he could get about the pitch and put a tackle in. Now he can barely string a pass together. I don't know if it's just what we do to these players.
Yeah, he was playing in a thing.
Go ahead.
Well, Davis, you got to remember when he first came in the team under Koeman, was playing in a middle three with Idrissa Gueye and Schneiderlin, and that was when Schneiderlin was playing dead well. So his job was just to go beyond the last man and get involved in the attack. So there's no wonder he looked all right then. Davis now is playing in a two-man midfield, having to be the stopper. He can't do it. We now know, you know, what position is he? What type of midfielder is he? He plays in the middle three and he's the one who goes forward. Whether he's good at it or not is up for debate, but we don't play that system.
And if if we
played that system, he wouldn't be the one doing it at this point. But when he had, you know, when he had Idrissa Gueye and Schneiderlin both playing well, and his job was to go forward from that platform, that's when he looked good. And we haven't played him like that since. We've had him as a deep midfielder, and he's not a good enough footballer. He's not a good enough tackler. It doesn't suit him. So I think that's the we've now answered the question about Tom Davis. Where does he play? A position we don't play. So unfortunately, I think he's probably going to, whether it's this summer or the one after, I think he's probably going to be on the way out because he doesn't fit what we want.
Could he be one of the players? I know there was rumours that it could be a swap deal if we go for this Højbjerg. Could he be one of the players involved in that, maybe?
I think it'll be John Joe Kenny. I think they need a right back, don't they?
Possibly, yeah.
They've got Kyle Walker-Peters and they all love him. But I can't imagine Spurs being good to deal with money-wise at the minute. So maybe it is John Joe Kenny. Could be Walcott. It won't be anyone like Bezic or, you know, someone like, you know, on FIFA where you just throw in fringe players. You throw in fringe players.
I love doing that on FIFA. It's like my favourite part of career mode. It's just binning off dead. We'll just part of swap deals.
It won't be anyone who we're not seeing playing because why would Southampton want a player who they couldn't even scout? It'd be someone who's played for us recently, so I think it will be someone like Walcott, John Joe Kenny, could even be Michael Keane, but you never know.
Yeah, I mean, I'd rather it not be Michael Keane because he's one of the few players who's looked interested in this resumed season.
Yeah, but if you're a Southampton fan and you're saying you're taking an Everton player, there's very few you'd say, yeah, Keane's probably one of them.
Yeah, fair enough. But yeah, I think the fact that we've ended this show really by going on to transfers tells you about where we're all got our attention turned to now. I think the Premier League season in itself has been over for a while for us in our last couple of games. All eyes are on how we're going to improve this absolute shit show of a team. So, yeah, it shouldn't be any surprise that we've finished on that. It's like you say, we're finishing on a bit of a high because anything's better than that game that we watched yesterday, apart from the Wolves game.
Yeah,
but there you have it, guys. Everton 1, Aston Villa 1. Let us know how you feel about this. Is there anything that we didn't touch on? A few podcast listeners, it's time for the middle bit where we give ourselves a needed break from discussing miserable Everton displays, which has become all too regular. We're going to discuss something a bit more random. For this podcast, we're going back to the food topic, and today I'm going to ask the lads, what's your favourite crisps? Terry, we'll start with you, mate. What's your best crisp?
Ooh. You know what?
He's intrigued by this one.
I'm not big on crisp. I do like crisp, but I never reach for them. I mean, but I think at the minute I'd have to go for the sweet chili sensations.
Oh, good shout, good shout.
Absolutely unreal. Like, you get them, bit of sour cream dip, unbelievable. Oof.
Thomas, what about you, mate?
I actually think the sweet chili sensations are absolutely vile, to be fair. I can't stand them when I eat them.
You're the first person I've ever heard say that.
Yeah, I know. People eat them all the time when they offer us one. I'm like, absolutely not. Like, I think they're just vile. I don't know why. I just can't stand. But then, to be fair, I don't know. I go through phases. I couldn't stop eating Wotsits for ages, like, last year. But now, I'm just more just, like, salt, vinegar, Walkers kind of person. I don't know, but I can't handle those. Not that I can't handle, like, they're not, like, spicy, but, like...
That's what it is. You just can't handle the spiciness of it.
Yeah, just the raw heat that comes from them, to be fair. But, no, I just don't like them.
So what are we going with then, Thomas?
I'll settle on salt and vinegar crisps. That's quite boring, to be fair, but I'll settle on that. I say that, I've actually just noticed I've got a massive pack of, you know, like a multi-pack of tangy cheese Doritos just in the corner of my room, but I like them, to be fair, but...
Fair play, yeah.
I've gone off them a bit. I think that's why they've been sat there for so long. I haven't gone near them.
Yeah, tell a lie, I'm changing my answer. It just popped into my head. Sour cream and chive, pop chips, they're dead hard to get. You can get them in Boots.
Oh, I know, yeah. I've heard of them.
Get them in Costa, and you can get them in Asda. And I had them once on a meal deal in Boots, and they're the most addictive thing you'll ever have. They're unreal. They're literally the elite level crisp. If you can't handle sensations, mate, then you just be aware of these. They're that nice.
Oh, God. Yeah, for me, I mean, I think there was a couple I had in mind, and I know Thomas isn't one for handling the chilies, but I like the chili Doritos, so they're up there. But I think you're on the note of anything when you talk about the most addictive crisps, you've got to go with Pringles, I think, and my go-to would be the Texas barbecue Pringles.
I never really had that before, to be fair. I've never been a master.
I think they're all right. Person. I'm not big on Pringles. Like, they're all right, but I don't get the hype. I think they're overrated.
Yeah, I mean, I think in general they're overrated, but Texas barbecue just isn't. It's just elite.
I like chicken ones. I don't know. Was it Walkers that did some like roast chicken crisps a while ago? I love them for like
a
week
them,
or something. Yeah, I haven't seen them in a while, but I loved eating them for like a week and then. I just went off them.
Steak McCoy's hit different as well. They're quite nice.
Oh, I like McCoy's too. I haven't had McCoy's in ages either. I was saying this like there's like a shortage of crisps. Like they're all out there. I just haven't eaten them. And,
well, like, I said, a crisp broth.
I started by saying, well, I don't really like crisp, and I have to do three different crispins of the mix here.
No, you've reeled off more than we have.
Those pop chips, they're one of the nicest things ever. They're so addictive. No, and but they're proper Tory crisp because you can't get them everywhere. Like if you're buying crisps,
you only get them in like a posh eatery or sort of like in like a like an press a manger or something. Sell them probably.
If you're willing to pay like £1.15, £1.20 for a pack of crisps from Costa, you're a raging Tory, and that's where you can get them. And I see them, and I just got to get them. They're that nice.
Bloody hell, that says something. I mean, it's enough to convert Terry into a Tory. That says it all, really.
Well, we know what box that fucking pack of crisps ticks when it goes into the booth.
Well, there you go. So basically what we've realised is it takes crisps to turn Terry into a Tory. So if like Boris is out there listening, like there's the only leaflet you need to send through the letterbox is a packet of pop chips.
Oh,
dear. Right, there we go. There's our middle bit. We've sussed that out. Now we're going to move on to the more depressing stuff and talk about Everton. We're going to look ahead to the Sheffield United game in our match preview. It's our final away day of the season. I say away day, but there hasn't been any real away days since March. We're at Bramall Lane to play Sheffield United in a Monday night fixture to look ahead to that. I've got Terry alongside me and also Thomas Robertson. We'll get straight into the lowdown for this. Thomas, we'll start with you. We go into this game in shocking form. I'm going to be a bit melodramatic here maybe, but no wins in two home draws. Crucially for this one, two away defeats. Sheffield United have Europe to play for. We have nothing to play for. And Chris Wilder has asked for a reaction to their poor defeat to Leicester the other day as well from what is a notoriously workmanlike side. If you follow the narrative, this could be another embarrassment for Everton, couldn't it?
Yeah, I was on it. I just got a full name introduction there. I don't think I've had one of them in a long time, actually.
This is what happens when you come on a show with me. I give you a special treatment, mate.
Yeah, because I was speaking to a Sheffield United fan for the opposition view just this morning. And obviously, I think we've all watched Chris Wilder's interview. It's quite something. I think that's always what people want to hear from our players. I mean, we're never going to get that from Ancelotti. And I don't want that, to be fair, because it's not the character that he is.
It's not who he is, no.
Obviously, no, not at all. But I guess it's what works for them, because obviously he's been, for the last like 4 years or whatever, he clearly knows how to get a response out of these players. There's been a few of them that have been with them since League One. And if there's a way to get a response out of them, he clearly knows exactly how to do it. And it's clearly by absolutely berating them. I mean, the comment that he made where he's like, you know, these are League One and Championship players playing in the Premier League. I thought that was the most like hard-hitting kind of comment you can make about a team, but I thought it was fair enough.
I'd love to hear Ancelotti call our team League One players.
That's what I was thinking. Fantastic. Yeah, he clearly knows how to get a reaction out of them. And then the guy I spoke to this morning said, normally when Wilder gives his interviews, he does like two or three a season. Normally the game after, they absolutely rampage through. So I said, that's not really a good sign for us. A team that's going to be motivated and it's going to press us. Not really ideal, especially not away from home. It's kind of a recipe for disaster at the moment, this game.
Absolutely. And I mean, our last two away performances were absolutely appalling. So It's not looking good. Terry, how do you feel going into this one, dare I ask?
Not optimistic. I mean, everything that Thomas said, isn't it, just rings true. I mean, this is the type of side we don't want to play at the minute.
Absolutely not.
A hard-working, industrious, you know, unselfish side who are going to, you know, pressure our players up in every single area of the pitch. But, you know, Carlo Ancelotti is going to look to the players and say, I need you to carry on proving to me you aren't a waste of time, because it's all one. You know, we got a draw at home against Aston Villa. It's not quite this big reaction people were hoping for after the Wolves game. But I think how do you react in the next away game will be a big thing for Ancelotti, because he's going to want to see, he's questioned the mentality in going to away grounds already. So he's going to expect them to turn up and, you know, compete and put in a good performance in the very following away game, because he knows that's the problem. And if it comes down to quality, it shouldn't be an issue, because we should have anyway, better players than Sheffield United, but we certainly haven't got harder working players or more energetic players. So if they can match the work rate and the energy, it's a big if. Then you'd hope that the quality difference would show through, but as I said, it's
not
a massive.
Not confident.
No, I mean you've said that they're not playing for anything, Everton, but a lot of them are playing for their futures. Let's be honest. So
but they haven't been doing that in the last couple of games. It looks like they don't want a future. So you know.
Well, yeah. I mean, I'm not expecting big things from this game, just mainly because of that. That interview I saw with Chris Wilder came, you just know, like, oh, there's going to be a huge reaction.
They're going to thump us.
And I'd sooner be playing a Chelsea or a Leicester, teams with quality players than playing Sheffield United next game, swear to God.
No, honestly, that could be probably the worst team he could be coming up against, the Sheffield United scorned.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's so ironic that comment, you know, that... Was it like in the gym at Finch Farm or something, where it's like hard work beats talent if talent doesn't work hard? It's the most ironic comment when it comes to our squad, because I mean, it's clearly going to be our undoing.
Do you know what? That is so weird. I was actually thinking that to myself this morning. I was like, I'm sure we've got that plastered on the wall in the training ground.
Right in the gym, big letters.
And good on you, because I completely forgot it. I was thinking that this morning, but good on you for bringing that up, because it's a very, very good shout and very, very applicable to the situation we're in as well. Mm. That's exactly the problem, isn't it? And that's why we're where we are in the table. Like Terry said, it's not because of talent, it's because of work rate. And it's a disgrace when you think about the Everton side, the great Everton side. They never shirked anything, they never left anything on the pitch. And this team has just fallen way below that standard. And even the players, whether they're very good or whether they're not,
you should always be setting standards and always doing the best, and they haven't been doing the best, let's be quite fully honest.
True. I mean, as I've already said, this the worst possible team we could play at the minute. A team that's going to be highly motivated with a high work rate and something to prove. And that is the complete opposite of what we've been playing like. So, you know, I'm going in, you know, just with me hands over my face going, not the face.
I thought you'd be having another trip to Chester Zoo or something, to be honest, Terry.
maybe I'll book a little trip to Chester Zoo. You're gonna get me in trouble. You, my work, think I'm shielding. that's a joke. He snitches out there.
Yeah, but I thought Branthwaite, when he came in, he just embodies everything that the rest of the team isn't at the moment. Because I mean, for an 18-year-old lad younger than me, and to be fair, I'm fairly young. I mean, out of all of us, I am the youngest, to be fair. To be younger than me, comes from Carlisle. He played like a handful of appearances for Carlisle. And he's come and he's brought his way into an Everton team, you know, Premier League under Ancelotti. Surely that's working harder. It's almost as if they should all be like paying attention to him and not him paying attention to them as much. But I mean, at least he looks good. If there was a positive, we could go forwards, I think.
Jared Brandt was fantastic in the last game, to be fair to him. And I've heard afterwards Fabian Delph asked him to show some respect.
Well, that is a point. Who do you think will play? Like, you know, I think Branthwaite's very likely anyway, just because Holgate's injured. Mina's probably not going to be back. You know, we haven't heard Ancelotti's press conference yet, so we don't know about Mina. But I'd start Branthwaite, start Gordon for me. I'd possibly start Moyes Keane. Not wholesale changes, but I'd do at least those three. Definitely.
I'd pick Beningame.
Hard, is he?
Yeah, I swear at this point he's been sat on the bench like four games and Ancelotti will still go, who?
He's been dropped out of the squad now, hasn't he? Wasn't he not there last
night? Yeah, he wasn't in the squad the last game.
Remarkable that. I mean,
Down to let that go,
but yeah, something happens. Yeah, the Binning League Brigade's gone more about now. But yeah, obviously, Sheffield United have picked up again. They had a poor performance against Leicester, to be fair, in the last game. But like Wilder said, he'll probably get a reaction out of them. And what better team to exact your revenge on than the most mentally weak side in the league?
Yeah, exactly. I mean,
let's be honest, that's what we are. I mean, technically, as Teddy said, we're not that bad, but mentally we're absolutely appalling. How it's horrific how fragile we are, isn't it? I mean, I still thought we might actually win the game until Villa scored, because they weren't great either. But as soon as we went behind, I thought we're getting a draw at best.
And yeah, I mean, it's combining our poor mentality now with nothing to play for. I mean, it's one thing, you know, some of them not caring at all, but then you just like couple that with the fact that we have literally nowhere else to go on the table. It's like we're battling Newcastle for 11th or 10th at the moment. Like, I mean, this game's just a massive recipe for disaster. Like, I mean, but like, I mean, I don't know about you, but I'm kind of giving up now. Like, going into this game, I don't really care what happens now. Just kind of. Ancelotti knows what he needs to do in the summer. I mean, it's the end of the season.
We've been doing these kind of discussions after games, extra time segments, match preview segments, and they always end up turning into transfer review segments, because all the fans are literally just starting to turn one eye to the transfer window and try and discuss how we improve this, because they're so disillusioned with the players we already have. You know, we're desperate to see some change, and hopefully it does come. But yeah, it's going to be an interesting one. Midfield is just, we definitely need about two or three midfielders now, I think. Watching the majority of that team in the midfield play again. I'd rather see them all be bombed out, but it's not that simple. But Marcel Brands has got quite the task on him, hasn't he? He's got quite the task this summer.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, this season, I mean, considering the start we had under Marco Joker, I mean, once Carlo came in, for me, and I know people hate hearing this because we've heard it so often, but I think this time it's actually, you know, it might stick. it's all about just getting things built in, the infrastructure built in the playing sense, and, you know, focus on the season after. But yeah, it's the same thing Klopp did. It's the same thing Rodgers done when he got to Leicester. Work with the players you've got, suss out who you want to keep, who's worth having, suss out who you don't want to keep, and get your system, your style, your playbook, get the players familiar with it. So I don't want, like people are saying, the 4-4-2 doesn't work. I know it doesn't because we haven't got the players for it, but that's what we're going to do. So don't, you know, change it to suit some weaker players and then have to change it back to 4-4-2 in the summer and we start next season having to learn it again. I'm fine with what we're doing at the minute. The results aren't good, the performances aren't good, but everyone now has shown Carlo Ancelotti exactly what they are and what he can expect of them. No one's pulled the wool over his eyes. So, going to the summer, we've got players there who we probably didn't realise we had. I think Branthwaite will probably have a bigger role than we expected. Anthony Gordon will definitely have a bigger role. Like, going into lockdown, he was... Yeah, promising kid, came on at West Ham, didn't really do anything. Now he's like, yeah, looks like our best midfielder. It's gone.
Yeah, he's been the real beneficiary of the lockdown period. And I was hoping for kids to benefit from it. I was hoping for a bit more than just one, to be honest. But like you say, Gordon and Branthwaite have both impressed. So it is a step in the right direction in that respect. And look at me sounding all optimistic on a show. This is like, I haven't felt like this since the Leicester game. This is... No, it's hard to think, to be honest, isn't it, that the Leicester game was only 2 weeks ago?
Mad about games.
And like, we were all like on cloud nine, thought we could get in the top seven, and now look at the state of us. Back to the typical depressed Evertonians.
The game since have put years on you, that's why.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I will say about Branthwaite and Gordon, though, is like, they do look like they're going to save us a bit of money now, to be fair, because, I mean, We've spoken so much about how we need another centre back. Obviously, when Gibson went out to Fleetwood, Mina's always injured. I'm not like trying to like overhype this kid who hasn't played a full 90 minutes yet, but like, let's be honest, he looks like a good player, and he looks like he might actually save us money in a summer where, you know, it's been said a million times, money's tight. It is for everyone.
We need to save money. So,
and then Gordon as well. Gordon seems to come in at the perfect time when Bernard's kind of just. His form's just kind of gone off a cliff, really.
What has happened to Bernard? I just can't get my head around it, because before lockdown, I mean, I'm not saying he pulls up trees because he doesn't, but he looked like a slick player who might fit into Ancelotti's system in that role, and now all of a sudden he looks like a complete liability. What has happened?
It's disappointing, though, because like, he's a player that I think everyone kind of just likes. Like, I think that's the thing with kind of him and Mina and Gomez. You know, when they came into the club, they seemed like they got it. Everyone seemed like they got along well. But then I think it's really, Bernard's really begun to show, like, I just don't think he's a good fit for the Premier League. Obviously, everyone always spoke about how he's too small. He just is. I mean, that's the fact of it now. I mean, but even before that, you know, he could beat a man, you know, he could play the shorter passes. Now he doesn't even like seem to be able to do that. And when you lose a characteristic that is kind of your defining personality, like, trait, and especially in this team, it's the same with Gylfi Sigurdsson. As soon as he got dropped back out of the number 10 and he couldn't have his pot shots every game to try and score a worldie, you know, for the season, he's dropped off. He's absolutely nothing. And it's the same for Bernard now. I think he doesn't fit into the 4-4-2 because he has to play too deep, I think. Because obviously when he was playing 4-2-3-1, he was kind of, you know, in that three kind of partnership just behind the striker. Now when he's further back, he does have to defend more and he can't get as forward as much as he likes. He's just been kind of found out as not the greatest player, really. It's disappointing, but it's kind of just the reality of it now.
How much of the situation we're in at the moment is down to the fact that players don't fit the system, or is it just bad attitude as well? Is it a bit of both?
I think the majority of it is the system. I don't think, I know a lot of people go, what? It's the attitude. Like, yeah, the attitude comes into it, but I honestly think, I don't think Bernard, I don't think Andre Gomez have got bad attitudes. I think they're struggling to play the system and they're struggling to play with, you know, some of the other players who are even worse in the system. So Bernard, as Thomas said, is playing further back, but he's also not got the two options centrally, you know, in a 4-2-3-1 to sort of play off. Like, he would have had Sigurdsson in the number 10 role and he would have had Drissa Gueye in centre midfield, like, to, you know, to work with. Now he's just on his own on the left. And this, what this has shown is, the, you know, obviously most of the world of football at one point played 4-4-2. It was far more prevalent. But obviously that's almost completely gone. Only low block teams play that at the minute. And even then, one of the strikers is a midfielder who comes in. It showed how many players get sort of the deficiencies covered by the five-man midfield. Have an extra midfield and
midfield. There's nowhere to hide in a 4-4-2.
Yeah, everyone's got their own job to do, and if you're not up to it, you can see it's clear as day. There's no hiding. There's no getting it wrong. So it is a little bit attitude with some players, like the application. Some of them are late. Sigurdsson's one of the laziest players I've ever seen. Like, he just doesn't want to do anything. But there's a lot of players. I don't think Iwobi's got a bad attitude. I just think he's struggling and having a terrible time playing football in the position.
He can't play in a 4-4-2. I don't think there's a place for Iwobi.
No, but this is the thing, though. It's like, that's still the formation we should play to, because if we've brought in a top manager and that's his preferred formation, and if you can't hack it, then you're not good enough for the club. You need to move on, and we'll bring in players who can, because it takes a strong player to play in a 4-4-2. Four-four-two can make average strikers look good, but it makes average midfielders look awful because they've got too much work to do. So all these players, the Wobies, Bernards, even Gomez's,
there's nowhere to hide for these players now.
No one thought prior to lockdown that they were probably going to go in the summer, and they still probably won't, considering the money won't be sloshing around like it usually does. But it's shone a big light on them, and it's shown that we need more powerful, more impactful, more decisive players. And the fact that Anthony Gordon's come in and looks like he can play in a 4-4-2, he's left the rest of the midfielders for dead, because he's the only one who looks like he's comfortable playing in the position he's been given.
I agree. I think it's much more the system, yeah. But because I actually think the majority of the players kind of do work well in the system, obviously, because Dinier kind of gets free roam down the left, which he's always wanted. And I think Coleman fits in quite well. When we kind of sit back and defend, he kind of goes into that third centre-back role. I think he's adapted that quite well. And obviously, before the lockdown, we saw Richarlison and Cavalier and benefited massively from playing in a two up front. But I just think it's the most essential part of the 4-4-2 is the two central midfielders, because you can get overrun, because obviously most teams do play the five-man, 4-2-3-1. And when you've got two central midfielders that one doesn't like playing there, one doesn't have the attitude, and then you've got Gomez who struggles without kind of an energetic, defensive midfielder next to him. And I just think it is the most essential part of the system. And it's the part that we're weakest at. But I think, to be fair to a lot of the players, I think they work quite well. Obviously, Sidibe worked well in the system kind of for a game or two when he was kind of going down the right-hand side. Obviously, we know now that's not going to happen. But it's as if Iwobi's tried to fit into that kind of role that Sidibe played, where he can come back, but then he can go forward as well. But it's just shown that Iwobi and Bernard, I think for me, they just can't come back. And then once they're all the way back, they can't then carry it forwards. And that's been the biggest disappointment for me, is that the midfield has just lost us, I think, this season now, because the rest of the players do fit quite well. And I think, to be fair, I don't know if Ancelotti will have envisaged this before he came in, but I mean, he might have, to be fair. Obviously, he's a world-class manager. I don't know who I am to tell him, but it's just like Coleman's age, and now he doesn't get forward as much as he did. He fits perfectly into the kind of five at the back now, because he can still defend. I think his defensive output's improved since the lockdown anyway. And I think that's a perfect role for Seamus Coleman now, because he doesn't have the legs to get up and down like he used to, and he doesn't want to either. But I genuinely think the midfield is just where our season just collapsed here. But also, by the sound of the rumours, the area we're looking the most strengthened. So I guess we'll just have to see next season now, as long as they can get the players they want in the position, kind of centre midfield role. I think we can easily push on. And I've said this for a few weeks now. I genuinely feel like we're a central midfield away from having a pretty decent side. Obviously, we need to improve wingers. Obviously, Gordon can't do everything on his own. But then I think central midfield is just so pivotal to this system. And if we improve that with the right players that Ancelotti wants, I genuinely think this side could be fairly decent.
Yeah, I think it's certainly a case for moving forwards. It's a midfield we need. I think a right mid and probably two centre mids could be game changers, but we have to get the recruitment right. So it's very much the onus is on brands as well to do the right thing when it comes to recruitment this summer. We can't have any bad buys this summer. We've got to get it right. And yet, here we are again. The match preview show's turned into a transfer show because we've all had enough of actually looking ahead to games of football now. We just want to see new players come through the door. New kits out. Everyone's buying the new kit. Everyone's got one eye on the new season anyway. The season's done and dusted. It has been for 2 weeks. But we've got two games to go. 180 more minutes of torture to get through before we can actually maybe get a bit more optimistic about Everton, which I'm really looking forward to because, you know, it's what you want. It's just, that's why I love doing these shows normally, is like you like to get your hopes up and get a bit carried away, even if, you know, it probably won't happen. But get these two games out the way and I'll be in a far better mood regardless of what happens. So yeah, there we go. We'll finish off there. We'll do our match predictions. Thomas?
Well, I don't know. 2-1 Everton.
Optimistic. Teddy?
I'm worried that we're going to get absolutely whacked, but I'm gonna be a shithouse and say a 1-1, an optimistic, possibly deluded 1-1.
I'm not going to be deluded at all. I'm going to say we lose 2-0.
Okay, fair enough, to be fair. I mean,
I think that's quite optimistic considering what I can envisage. I'm envisaging Wolves, but worse at this rate. But, I mean, that's probably, it's probably about right given the way things are going. And unfortunately, this team's so spineless that I have very little confidence in them, especially against the Sheffield United team, who are well motivated. So yeah, this is like I'm saying, guys, I've got two more weeks of this and then hopefully I'll be back to being a lot more optimistic for you. But, you know, devil's advocate at the moment and it's just depressing. So, you know, I'm not going to sugarcoat it and I think we're going to get beat. But if you're listening to the podcast, it's time for us to round off with the quiz. Tonight, it's a different type of quiz. It'll be another showdown between Thomas and Teddy. Tonight, it's a quick-fire general knowledge round. I'll be asking Teddy 10 questions, then I'll ask Thomas 10. The person with the most right answers is the winner. Pretty simple. We'll get straight into it. And, you know, you get to pick a song at the end. So, you know, if any is feeling quite confident, start thinking about some songs. But in the meantime, Teddy, we'll get straight on to you. Question number one. How many substitute appearances does Moyes Keane have for Everton this season across all competitions?
God, I saw this the other day and I forgot. 22?
The answer is 25. Right. Andrei Kanchelskis, this is question two. Andrei Kanchelskis left Everton for which Italian club in 1997?
No idea. I got into football quite late. It's before my time, so people are thinking, you absolute plastic bastard. they're going to go, you don't know who Kanchelskis left to? I never saw Kanchelskis. Sorry, guys. I'm a product of the Moyes era, so...
So am I. I think we all are on this show.
Who's say? Wait, he was the manager when I was born, to be fair. I don't know how I could have managed that.
Wow.
Any other way.
Impressive. it wasn't Rome, it was Fiorentina.
Fair enough.
Right. Question three. Adam Lennon scored how many goals for Everton in his time at the club?
I'm not going to get a single question right here. 9.
Spot on.
Yes!
Crying it in there, Terry, honestly.
Gipped it down the middle, had just all fooled.
Number four, Samuel Eto'o originally signed a contract for how long at Everton?
3 years.
It's 2 years.
Oh.
Question five, Romelu Lukaku wore what squad number in his first season?
17.
Yes. Now he's talking. Against which team did Aruna Kone score his only Everton hat-trick?
Sunderland.
Yes. Now we're talking. Question 7. Ramiro Funes Mori played more than 50 games for Everton. True or false?
True.
It was true. He played 67 games for Everton. Question number 8. Which team did Joseph Yobo sign for after leaving Everton?
Fenerbahce.
He's right. He's cooking on gas now. Doing bits now. Question 9. What was Louis Saha's squad number in the 08-09 season?
8.
It was number 9. It was the year he scored in the final at Wembley.
Anyway.
And finally, question 10. How many goals did Yakubu score for Everton?
It's 31.
Oh, you're close, mate. 33.
Oh, I was going to say 33 and bottled it.
I thought you were going to say 34. I was going to say that was even more painful there. Yeah. There you go. Right, so Teddy, you have scored out of 10. 5 out of 10. Thomas, you've got to
I'm never getting sick. I'm never getting that.
Right, Thomas. First question, true or false, David Weir played a game for Everton in 2011-12.
False.
It was true, he played for Everton's under-23s.
Oh, that's so bollocks.
Honest to God. Question number 2. What shirt number did Phil Jagielka wear in his first season at Everton?
He was probably here before I was... I don't know.
How old were you then? Because I was like 11.
He was still in his dad's ball sack when that happened.
I don't know, 16.
He did wear number 16.
Get out. No way. <go. laughs>
Question number 3. How many goals did Gareth Barry score for Everton?
Not a lot. 11.
5 he scored for Everton. Question 4. Thomas Radzinski left Everton to join which club?
Somewhere in Canada, MLS, somewhere, I don't know, Montreal Impact.
He went to Fulham.
Oh, crap, I've literally no idea.
Question 5, which team did Andy Johnson sign for Everton from?
Palace?
Spot on. It was
Palace.
Yeah. Question 6, how old was James Vaughan when he scored his first goal for Everton against Crystal Palace?
18.
He was 16, youngest ever scorer at the time.
Right.
I think he still is, actually.
Still is.
Yeah. Number 7, who was Ronald Koeman's assistant manager during his time at Everton?
Erwin Koeman.
It was indeed. Question 8, Richarlison has how many Premier League goals for Everton during his time at the club so far?
I don't know, 34?
25. Question 9, what was Jack Rodwell's squad number at Everton in the 08-09 season?
20.
It was number 26.
Oh, I've lost then, to be fair. That's the end. I can't win.
Yeah, I think you've blew it here, mate. 1, 2, 3, 4. Yeah, Terry's our winner for once.
I knew more of Terry's questions than my own. That's annoying as that.
Now, you should have done it like the chase where you got to pick which set of questions you've got.
Yeah.
So there you go, guys. Our winner of our quiz with the twist is Teddy. For once, he's got one over on Thomas in the quiz. And for once, it means that Teddy actually has to look through his Spotify and pick us a song to see us out at the end of the podcast. So, Teddy, what are you going to go with this week? Are you going to venture away from your rock roots? Or
no, I don't think I will. I think I'm going to go for more. Going to come forward a few years in the rock choice from the old, the 80s days into the 90s, 2000s. But first and foremost, Thomas, you're playing with your flip-flops on, mate. Like, he's clearly just winding the season down. It's his mentality's gone.
I'm already on the deck chair, to be fair. Season's done for me.
I bet he's going to have a Chris Wilder-esque response in his next quiz.
He didn't even want the points record. Wasn't bothered.
No, it wasn't interesting going unbeaten, to be fair. Just can't take any shine off my consecutive titles. Obviously, you know, all the best players have their blips, to be fair.
The unbeaten players up here.
Even I can't win it all. So I'll give you this one, you know. But obviously... obviously, it won't stay long for it won't stay like that for long. Huddersfield have just scored there. Sorry, that's just what I was looking at my phone. Leeds are up in the Premier League next season.
Is that 2-1 to Huddersfield now?
2-1 at Huddersfield versus West Brom.
West Brom are going to bottle it, aren't they?
Brentford are going above them now if they win.
That'll happen. They've got Stoke.
Imagine all the hipster channels all raving over Brentford next season. I'm not even against it. I think they're a good team and you know they're doing things right, but they all adore anything like that, don't they?
Like when Brentford only need a point now. They're ahead on goal difference, so they only need a point to go up, and it's against Stoke. So.
Right then, my song of choice is a song that how I imagine Carlo Ancelotti felt in the Wolves game, and it's In Too Deep by Sum 41. When I was a little teenage mosher. Like Sum 41 and Green Day and all that, they were my. I loved them. I absolutely loved them. Their music videos is how I wanted my life to be. And then, little did I know that music videos aren't real life. They didn't go to parties like that either. But yeah, In Too Deep by Sum 41. It's a pop punk classic,
isn't it? Yeah, I'd say so. But yeah, we'll have to dash anyway because I'm going to the pool party with Sum 41. So
yeah, that's how life is. You know what's depressing about that?
This is America.
I'm older now than they probably are in that video. They're probably only in their mid 20s. That's got me sick.
Off mad, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, I think I've got like a full another 20 years on just watching Everton this season. So
tell me about it.
Yeah. So Sum 41 of it. Oh, what's happened?
Billich is losing his head here. I've just stuck the game on for the end of the podcast. Billich has lost his head on the sidelines. Like he's having a go at the fourth official and everything.
He's cracking. Lavin's cracking up.
He's gone full Jurgen on the sidelines. Yeah, he's not happy about it at all.
Gaining at the fourth official.
Yeah, literally.
Oh yeah. So we'll leave it at that anyway. We leave you with Sum 41 In Too Deep. Thank you for tuning in on the Toffee Blues. See you later.